prepare yourself for the clash of punk rock, politics, and your uncensored, unafraid host, Remso W. Martinez. You are about to experience the Remso Republic.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. It's been a crazy, crazy week, which is why I want to do this special Monday morning episode. As always, I'm your host, Remso W. Martinez, and you're listening to what I hope is your favorite podcast, The Remso Republic. So, I know some of you are asking, why are you doing a Monday episode? You never do a Monday episode. Well, a lot of things are said to have never happened. Trump wasn't supposed to happen. The Lord of the Rings series was not supposed to happen. Man was not supposed to get on the moon. So, never is really kind of a loose term. But, for this Monday episode, it's kind of extra special because I got a certain individual who I've been trying to tag down for months now. Just like the Chupacabra and Bigfoot, he's kind of eluded me. I finally found him. Well, I didn't actually find him. He kind of got back to me and was like, let's go ahead and do the show. So I was like, let's do it right now. So who is this magical Chupacabra? Well, it's Alex Merced. He's a Libertarian candidate running for U.S. Senate out in New York. Alex, how's it going?
Hey, it's going good. It's actually been going really well. I can't complain.
So, as a New Yorker, how did it feel to see your favorite person in the world accept the Republican nomination last week?
Not good, I guess. Basically, I have not been a fan of Trump. A lot of people close to me are, which you know, can be painful. but basically, it just confirms and just reaffirms why I've decided to go all in on the Libertarian Party. I mean, I've been Libertarian, or at least my Libertarian awakening was back with the Ron Paul campaign in 2008. And, you know, I got involved with the Republican Party and tried to make a go of it with a lot of the Libertarian-leaning Republicans. But at this point, over the last 2 or 3 years, I've decided to basically go all in with the Libertarian Party. I feel in the long run, that's definitely the better route to go. And honestly, things are moving at a quicker pace than I ever imagined them to, far as the Libertarian Party building up a force that can really affect change.
Yeah, definitely. So
I don't
want to start off the show ignoring you and just talking about Trump. Let's ignore Trump for now. For now, Alex, how about you tell the viewers and listeners at home a little bit about yourself so they get to know you?
Got it. Okay, so for those who don't know who I am, the name is Alex Merced, and basically, I'm a Libertarian, of course.
Bam!
And
gotta get that out.
Yep, and basically, what people usually know me for is my YouTube videos. When I got involved with the Ron Paul campaign in 2008, I moved to New York in 2008, actually. That's when I moved to New York. I graduated from Bowling Green State University in Ohio in 2007. I actually got into Ron Paul during 2007. And what happened is that I had a camcorder that I got, and I started just doing sort of video blogs or vlogging in 2008. And those videos are still up there on YouTube. You can see me just sitting there defending Ron Paul at every corner and constantly speaking to the ideas of liberty. And during that time, I now have over 2,000 videos on YouTube that I've made over the last 8 years about everything. Because then even after the campaign, I got deep into Austrian economics, libertarian philosophy, and whatnot. And as I would read books, I would document the things I was learning and also document the things I was hearing and my responses to the news. So this is huge catalog of just sort of me talking about things. And a lot of people usually asking this question or that question about liberty have stumbled upon one or two of my videos at some point. Probably one of the most popular videos I have is about a 90-minute video on the history of economic thought, where I just kind of go through all the different economists. It's probably I get like 10,000 views a month just on that one video alone. But since then, I have alexmerced.com, which has become the hub of all my different projects, which there are many. But basically, the biggest thing since, in 2013, I got recruited by the Libertarian Party to run for public advocate, which is sort of like the vice mayor of New York City. Mainly because the mayoral candidate, Michael Sanchez, he used to watch my YouTube videos, and he's like, oh, yeah, you know, I never really thought of myself as sort of I still don't consider myself sort of a libertarian celebrity yet. Like, when I think of libertarian celebrities, I think of people like Austin Peterson, Julie Borowski, and I still don't believe that I'm even near that level yet. But it's always cool when I meet people who are fans.
Hey, see, so Michael's pimping yourself paid off. Be proud of it. Be proud of it.
Yes, yes. No, I can't complain. But yeah, so Michael Sanchez reaches out to me and he says, you know what, we'd like to see if we can have you as a public advocate candidate. So I got recruited into the race and I reached out to people. I used some of my social media techniques, but, you know, it was all new to me and I was still feeling out the process. I didn't want to necessarily – one of the things about a lot of libertarian candidates is that we're scared to raise money. One, it's tough to raise money, but we don't necessarily want to cross those thresholds that require reporting, because a lot of times we don't have the money for the lawyers, the accountants to really feel comfortable that we're not going to end up having some $10,000 fine because you didn't follow fundraising rules perfectly. So I was kind of on that boat. In New York City, you spend less than $1,000, you don't have to report or do any of that stuff. So I kept it under $1,000. And I did pretty well. I got 10,000 votes for 1% of the vote, which the next highest libertarian vote total was 5,000 in that New York City race. I think I might have been in the top 20 vote getters for the country, actually, for the LP that year. It went really well, you know, in context. And so this year, I actually actively sought out the nomination of the Libertarian Party to run against Chuck Schumer, which is a really interesting race, which the dynamics of that race I really want to get into.
I've got a quick question. Now, just so that I know, New York, you guys have kind of like a fusion ticket system?
Yeah, it's really weird. Basically, what happens is that parties – so first off, we'll talk about how ballot access works.
Okay.
Like, basically, for a party to have ballot access, meaning they get a party line, and it's a lot easier for them to get on the ballot because then they only have to get registered voters in their party to sign petitions and a much lower number. In order to do that, you have to get 50,000 – your party has to get a governor's candidate to get 50,000 votes in a gubernatorial year. So that would be – the next year would be 2018, which we're all looking forward to. Larry Sharp, the amazing Larry Sharp.
The most interesting libertarian in the world.
I agree.
I call him.
Yeah. I wouldn't actually be the Senate candidate if it wasn't for Larry Sharp. I credit him very much for being the Senate candidate, which I'll get into that as well. But basically, that's how you get ballot access in New York. Other parties then have to – if they're not – they don't have ballot access, they have to petition as independents. But a candidate can have multiple lines. So very often, the major party candidates, they don't want to have all these different competing parties against them, so they seek out the nominations of these other parties as well. So the Republican – so, for example, my Republican opponent, Wendy Long, she also has the Conservative Party nomination.
Yeah, I actually wanted to bring her up because and, you know, I actually, in case you didn't know, I currently live in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So you really just kind of focus on my state-level politics and, you know, some of the federal races that pop up on the radar thanks to the news. But the first time I really started noticing your race was because, you know, I'm a big William F. Buckley fan, so obviously I knew about the Conservative Party of New York, and I know that they endorsed Wendy Long. For the most part, and just to clarify, I'm a split-ticket voter. I've always been a libertarian, but I don't pledge to always vote for libertarians. I liked Wendy Long up until the point she wanted to be Mrs. Trump.
Agreed.
Yeah, and I found out about your race probably I found out about your campaign probably about a month and a half ago, and I was like, oh, thank God we have a libertarian, so at least there's a voice of sanity now. But she got the Republican and the Conservative Party nomination.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have that going on for yourself, or are you just a libertarian candidate?
I'm just running purely on the libertarian line. Basically, there really won't be many other lines on there. Basically, the Working Families Party, which is one of the other parties, they already endorsed Schumer, and the Independence Party already endorsed Schumer. So it's really
– so he's basically a communist.
Correct.
I mean, basically, you just got to call it what it is, right?
Yeah.
Well, he's just missing the People's Revolution Party or whatever.
He's a politician, and he plays the game very well, but that's what makes him such a dangerous person to have in office, because he's all about playing the game and not about making real change.
Exactly.
And I'll talk about some of the really, really dangerous things that he's been proposing recently, because literally he makes proposals every week that are just asinine, and I have to comment on them.
Yeah, Alex, definitely hold on to that. But first, we're going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break. Folks, you're listening to the Remso Republic. Hang on tight, and we'll be back in a moment.
Take the show on the go by subscribing to the Remso Republic on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, and YouTube. Don't be left out.
For years, the Republican and Democrat parties have used social issues and crises to keep us at odds with one another. They've divided us into groups and pit each group against the other, while those in government have together collaborated to strip us of our liberty little by little. In 2009, I decided to do something about it, and the Rupert for Senate campaign was born. Government of, by, and for the people requires our participation, not as voters, but as leaders and decision makers. But the parties have made it all but impossible for real, ordinary Americans to do so. So this average American has, since 2009, worked to give the voters, at least of Ohio, a choice outside the parties. The message is simple. The Constitution protects every American equally, but it's powerless to protect itself. That's our job, and it's time we take it seriously. You can learn more about my campaign at ScottRupert.com. I'm Scott Rupert, independent candidate for Ohio's U.S. Senate, and I approve of this message.
What's our problem with messaging the ideas of liberty? Is it the ideas? Is it the people? Maybe it's both. Maybe it's the fact that we're just not doing it in a smart type of way. This is where the Libertarian Youth Caucus comes in. The Libertarian Youth Caucus represents the millennial wing of the Libertarian Party. They're trying to expand the party base while finding new ways to communicate simple, timeless principles such as open minds and free markets. What we need to know is how to find the next generation of voters and make them vote for liberty. We can have a smaller government and a freer economy in our lifetime. And I believe that if we want to help invest in the Libertarian Party, the best way to do so is with the Libertarian Youth Caucus. Learn more about them today at lyc.silkstart.com. That's lyc.silkstart.com.
This message is approved by the Libertarian Youth Caucus.
Everyone, welcome back. We've got U.S. Senate candidate in New York, Alex Merced, on the show. Alex, sorry I cut you off earlier. We had to hit that commercial break. Anyway, if you could continue, that'd be great.
Okay, yeah. But basically, again, my opponents. And then basically, it's just going to be Schumer and Wendy Long. Those are my opponents. There may be a Green Party candidate. We'll see if they get enough signatures to get on the ballot. But from what I know,
why would they need a Green Party candidate, though? They already have Communist Schumer.
From what I can tell, like, the person who's running for the Green Party candidate, they're, like, they're basically running to promote themselves, in a sense. And they don't seem to be they don't have a cohesive message, per se.
Kind of a sidebar at this point. The Green Party, exactly. My thing with them, they say they're green on the outside, but they're actually just red on the inside. But anyway, I digress. Please continue.
I like that. But basically, Wendy Long Schumer. So basically, what it's come down to, and this is the most exciting thing about my race, is it's become a microcosm of the presidential race. So basically, on the Democrat side, I have someone who's sort of been this longtime establishment, sort of looked at as Binley. Most people generally feel like they're very represent what they don't like about Washington, D.C., but they're Democrats, so we still got to vote for them. That's kind of like how people feel about Hillary. That's how people feel about Schumer. And Schumer was a Hillary supporter. So in the whole Hillary versus Bernie Sanders race, Schumer was on the Hillary side. So basically, Schumer is New York's Hillary, even though I guess Hillary is New York's Hillary. And then on the opposite side, you have, again, as you referred to her, Ms. Trump, Wendy Long. So basically, you have this other candidate, and then Wendy Long, this is not her first race. She ran in 2012 against Gillibrand, and she lost by the widest margin in New York history. Wow. No Senate candidate has ever lost by that much, and the Republicans have decided to run her again. Just shows that they're not seriously trying to win that race. They rather not. So basically, I'm the only person who's seriously trying to run against Schumer at the end of the day. And we've been pulling out all the stops. So kind of like how earlier I was just talking about how a lot of libertarians honestly, they try to avoid those reporting thresholds. This year, that is not the case. We've pulled out the stops. I have gotten the services of Ebolt Consulting. They're the same company that helped Austin Peterson's campaign
Jeffrey
out
Carson,
with the FEC.
Right.
Yep, Jeffrey Carson. Very awesome guy. So they're helping me out with the reporting, making sure that we're compliant with the FEC. So that way we are not shy about fundraising this year. We've already more than crossed that $5,000 threshold that requires you to report with the FEC. So basically, I got a campaign manager, Brian Waddell, who used to be the Manhattan Libertarian Party chairman. So we're building up an actual team, and we're actually going to run a solid campaign. We've already gotten some media spots. I got to be on statewide TV on Capital Tonight, which was – that actually did wonders. Like that, after that, the campaign got all sorts of exposure, and it's been going really well since that interview.
Did you see a boost in your fundraising, though?
At that point, the fundraising operation hadn't been fully set up yet.
Okay.
So basically, fundraising has been – I've been doing the sort of traditional – calling basically as a politician, you have to call people who believe in your message and sit there and tell them, you know what, we're looking to win and it's time to do this. So I've been doing all the work that a lot of times third party candidates don't want to do, because it's not the fun work, it's not the pretty work. But we're looking to win this year. We're looking to really get the message out there and make a statement that a third party candidate, a Libertarian Party candidate, can compete, make a statement, and win. Yeah, I think we can beat Schumer.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, just apart from your race, I think we can see this across the country. Now, one thing I do kind of want to bring up, because the media is still hounding on it, we had Ted Cruz last week, and I think it was really hilarious because Gary Johnson was at the convention and he did a quick interview of CNN New Day with Chris Cuomo, and after the whole Ted Cruz basically dropped the mic moment, Gary Johnson's joking around and he's like, well, you know, Ted Cruz basically just endorsed me. I think a lot of constitutionalists for up until that point who were maybe on edge, I think that you know, it either pushed them in one or two directions, but it wasn't a mushy middle. It was either they're going to vote for Trump, or because Cruz stood his ground, he stood by his principles, they're now looking at third parties. For you, what would your message be to all those, you know, Tea Party conservatives and those constitutionalists that heard what Ted Cruz said when he said vote your conscience? Are you going to try and appeal to those people a little bit? Are you going to take advantage of the situation?
Of course.
What's your tactic?
Of course. Okay, now regarding what I want to do as far as Ted Cruz supporters or Bernie supporters or whatnot, the message of liberty, especially the principled voters, such as a lot of Ted Cruz voters on the conservative side, or to Bernie Sanders supporters on the progressive side, they want to vote for someone with principles. Now, I don't think – they may not agree with me on every issue. But the bottom line is that over the last almost decade, I have proven that I am consistent, that I care about what I'm talking about as I persistently talk about it. Again, you can watch videos going back to 2008 where I'm saying similar things. Just I think my opinions are a lot more refined, and the amount of history and philosophy I understand and my ability to articulate it has improved over time. But on top of it, there's a lot more at stake when you vote for third party. It's also about changing the culture of politics. So I'm also running on the ideas of liberty, but I'm also running that I want to be a leader in showing what our elected representatives should be. And saying three qualities. There's three qualities that I'm going to display that I want to inspire not just other libertarians, but candidates of all types to start displaying. That's transparency. So always being able to say what you think when you think it. So people ask me what I feel about things on my Facebook page or on Twitter or whatnot, and I give them straight answers. Sometimes, and they're just shocked that I responded. It's like, okay. Accessibility, which falls along with any of that. So I give them an honest answer, and I'll give them an answer. Very often politicians don't give answers. I've been very accessible to the people of New York, and so far the response has been great for it. People have been more willing to just get involved. And I ask people, even if they disagree with me, just like the page and give me the opportunity to earn their vote. I don't expect people to read one thing about me or see one thing about me and be like, oh, yeah, that's the guy. I'm voting for him. I'm like, no, you shouldn't. If you're skeptical about me, if you think I'm just another politician, that should be the way you feel, because that's how we should be feeling about politicians, because they've given us over the years no other reason to think any other way. So I expect people to have that initial response to me, but I ask, just give me a chance.
Yeah,
let Alex, me through my actions. Yep.
Yeah, definitely. And I agree with 100% of what you're saying. And I'm on your team, man. I want you to succeed. I just have one gripe, and I'm probably nitpicking, but I've got to say it because no one else is saying it in talk radio or podcasting. And I'm saying it probably because I'm a little bit biased, but for the longest time, I was a Ted Cruz supporter. For the longest time, I wanted him to not only be the GOP nominee, but I wanted him to be president. I was happy that when he dropped out, we had a surge of conservatives coming in. Now, everyone talked about that surge. We saw a giant boom in Libertarian Party memberships when Ted Cruz dropped out. We didn't see that with Bernie Sanders. When Bernie Sanders dropped out, he endorsed the establishment. When Ted Cruz dropped out, he waited all these months. He's waited up to 4 months now, and he said, vote your conscience. Okay. I'm not endorsing Trump. Now, my only thing is this. You say you're going to appeal to Bernie supporters that are burned out because they don't want to vote for Hillary. I think you should do that. That's what any consultant, that's what any campaign manager would tell you to do because they are part of the electorate. But my thing is this. I'm seeing all these polls online, primarily through libertarian sources. And here's my thing. With the data they're collecting saying, oh, all these former Bernie supporters are going to vote for Gary Johnson. All these commercials Gary's putting out to get Bernie supporters. A lot of those polls are selectively sampled to give Gary Johnson an edge. A lot of those polls, they're not showing how many of those Bernie supporters ended up actually registering Libertarian, looking up Gary Johnson, or even donating a buck to the party. Do you think we've over-exaggerated the amount of progressive support we thought that we were going to get? Because I'm seeing that that's something that I think we're doing. But with the conservatives, with the conservatarians like myself, we saw that they were actually coming with us. We saw Austin Peterson rally them together and actually make a difference. So do you think we need to emphasize one more than the other? I mean, what's your take on that?
I don't think we need to emphasize one more than the other. Do I think that coming out of the national convention, did we alienate
conservatives?
Yes, I do think that there was some wrong moves done at that point. I think Austin Peterson was making some great ground, and I was an Austin Peterson supporter at the convention. I voted for Peterson and Sharp. I do still think Peterson has an ability to deliver a message that can build a winning coalition around the libertarianism, and that's why I was excited about his candidacy and why he eventually won his support. I thought his message was the winning one. Far as being able to build a coalition. Now, it doesn't mean I don't think we should be reaching out to Bernie Sanders supporters. There is polling data that shows we've gotten 23% of that support. And then me being from New York and running in New York, there's a lot more. At the end of the day, you take a look at Republicans versus Democrats in New York, there's a lot more votes to take from the Democrats than there are from the Republicans. If I took every Republican vote, I'd still be probably 20 points away from winning in New York. So basically, I need to create a broad appeal on both sides. So basically, to me, it's always about how can I reach out to everybody, not – and I think so far I've been actually quite successful then creating – in messaging in a way that appeals to the left, that appeals to the right by just being sincere and just saying this is what I believe. And wouldn't it be nice to have someone that actually believes in what they say? And worst comes to worst, even if you disagree with me, I think we can all agree that having one or two libertarians in elected office holding the two parties accountable would make a huge difference in the culture of politics.
Exactly. Alex, we're going to jump right back on that topic, but we're going to take our last commercial break. Folks, you're listening to the Remsa Republic. Just give us one more minute and we'll be right back.
Remsa in the mix.
So people often ask me what podcasts I listen to, you know, and I'm not listening to old episodes of my own, that is. There are many great out there. There are some that are entertaining, funny, you learn from them, they just give you a great insight you're not going to hear anywhere else. But there's one show that really comes to mind when I think of where to get your starting ground and understanding what open minds and open markets mean. It's actually the show that I listened to when I first started learning about libertarianism. It's the Lions of Liberty podcast with its host Mark Clare. Mark and his team do excellent things, from libertarians in a living room drinking liquor to Felony Fridays. They have a great list of just amazing interviews, talking to the movers and shakers in the liberty movement. And let me tell you, if you want to get your friends who are a little apolitical, or they're a little liberal or a little conservative, but they like the ideas of liberty, Mark Clare will give it to you at the Lions of Liberty. So go ahead, check them out on Google Play, Stitcher, and iTunes today, and check it out for yourself. I guarantee you will not regret it.
Check it out today at www.lionsofliberty.com.
right, everyone, welcome back. We've got Alex Merced, the Libertarian Party candidate for U.S. Senate in New York, on the show. Alex, welcome back.
Hello.
What we were kind of talking about earlier, I like what you said. We've got to balance things out. In terms of kind of like the strategy, and you're running for federal office. A lot of Libertarian candidates running for a federal office, they're trying to try and hitch their wagon to Gary Johnson, per se. I'm just curious, because there are some issues that I take with him, and for the record, I'm still going to vote for Gary Johnson, Bill Weld. I want libertarians to have ballot access. I've thrown away my, you know, my chip on my shoulder of them, and I'm going to vote for them. But there are just some issues that I feel a lot of conservatarians like myself want to know when it comes to the other candidates, and I was wondering if I could just ask you a few of those questions.
Go for it. That's what I'm here for. I love to talk about the issues.
Perfect. The biggest question that comes to my mind is, what's your stance on abortion? Are you pro-life? Are you pro-choice? Where do you stand on that?
Being a child of the Ron Paul Revolution, I do consider my values to be pro-life. I do think that the child has a right to his life, and that we should try to promote life and the choice of life. I just don't think prohibition would be effective. And here's generally my stance on that, in the sense that if the goal is to make sure that there's less abortions, we could go much. Think of all the money that gets donated to pro-life political organizations, and very little results that have been achieved over the last 8 years. And very likely, if you did have prohibition, you wouldn't necessarily have less abortions. Instead, you would just have more dangerous ones. But if you took all that money and donated it to charities that supported pregnant women and made it easier for them to choose life, or donated and invested in technology that basically made it easier to remove a child from a mother's womb in a safe and healthy manner earlier in the pregnancy, you would actually address that issue, one, in a more libertarian way, in my opinion, and also at the same time actually address the issue legally. Because right now, my understanding is that the law of the land is that abortion's legal till viability. So the issue is, how early can viability be? So if you invested in the technology, you invest those dollars into the technology to make viability earlier on in the pregnancy, you'd also, through private investment and innovation, you'd actually be addressing the legal question and actually getting results sooner without necessarily that dynamic that you have in this sort of intense debate over rights over one's body versus rights over one's life. Because there is essentially there is a property rights conflict there, but I think we can address it and actually make both sides happy, reduce abortions, and honor women's rights over their bodies and the child's right to its life through private investment and private charity, much more so than trying to force government and wasting dollars in politics.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And you hit something that far and few people between consider. It's the fact that if we were to outlaw abortion, you would still have back alley abortions of coat hangers. It wouldn't get rid of it. What we need to do is promote a culture of life.
Agreed. Basically, to me, a lot of these social issues, everyone always looks for prohibition when it comes to social issues. I always say my opinion on abortion is the same opinion I have on guns. It's the same position I have on hate. It's the same position I have on immigration. And I'll leave it at those four for now. But basically, the idea is that prohibition doesn't work. Prohibition just creates a more dangerous and less transparent black market and makes the issue less visible socially. So same thing again for guns. You create prohibition, you have black markets, you make the situation more dangerous, less transparent. Same thing with hate. If you force, and this is one of the areas where I do, where me and Gary part ways, the whole bake the cake issue. But again, just because we part ways on one or two issues, I'm still going to vote Gary Johnson. And I still think Gary Johnson would be a hell of a president. His record is good as an executive. So at the end of the day, I can walk away safely that at the end of 4 years of a Gary Johnson presidency, that while I may disagree with him on an issue or two, people will walk away feeling a lot better about the results of voting libertarian. But back to baking the cake.
We're never going to outlive that whole debacle, are we?
There's a lot to it. And there is a lot to it, basically.
It's just, this is July now, and we're still talking about Gary's. I would make the government force you to bake the cake. Just do it.
I understand where he's coming from when he says that, but my perspective is, like, for example, if I was a senator back in the 1960s for the Civil Rights Act. Now, the Civil Rights Act addressed several different things. It wasn't just one law that just said, oh, discrimination is now illegal. It was a law that said basically governments cannot force or coerce private parties to discriminate. And that I'm totally for, and which is a major reason why I would vote for the Civil Rights Act, because it did prevent government from forcing people to discriminate, which is government forcing anything is evil, but forcing people to not be able to associate is a very unique kind of evil. But at the same time, it took one step in the right direction and then went a little too far and said, well, also, you can't personally act on your own prejudices privately and with your own private property. And it's not that I think people should be discriminate. I don't think people should. I mean, again, I'm pro-life in my values. I don't do drugs. I don't drink. But I think all those things, people should have the choice to do them, because telling them that they don't have the choice doesn't mean they won't have these choices. So if you tell people they can't discriminate, then you can't see the prejudice in our society. It makes it less transparent. As a minority, I would actually like to know, does that business like me or not like me? If that business has a sign that says no Latinos, then I don't want to shop there. Why would I want to give them my money? By not knowing
what's funny is that restaurant would probably, I'm assuming it's a restaurant, I know you didn't specify that, but that business probably hires like 20 million Mexicans in the back.
Oh,
just looking at how America operates these days.
Well, that's just, you know, economics. but I mean, you know, and that goes back to the immigration issue, which I'm sure we'll get to. But bottom line is this, I would rather have transparency in people's values, because then that way I can empower with my dollars people who are more open-minded. But right now, when I go to a store, and if that store owner is going to discriminate against me, they can't act on it, and I'm economically empowering them. So if anything, you're perpetuating economic empowerment of people with sort of older, less open-minded views by making discrimination illegal.
Well,
and that's sort
I
of my big issue with
the other thing. I think we ignore the most discriminated block of Americans in the country. They get almost no attention. Do you think you know who I'm talking about?
I'm not going to guess.
I'll answer it for you. Shirtless, shoeless Americans. Because you go to any restaurant or business in America, and most likely you're going to see a small plaque somewhere that says, no shoes, no shirt, no service. And it just comes down to that type of stuff. Well, if I don't want long hair, smelly hippies coming into my barbershop? Then again, I want long-haired people coming to my barbershop because I could charge them more. But, I mean, just that example. It's little things. I don't think Gary got that. We're all thinking of the, you know, Christians being forced to bake a gay Nazi wedding cake and stuff, but we forget little things like that. What if I own, a loan business and I don't want people of poor credit and stuff
Totally agree.
I mean, little discriminating factors like that. And I think this all leads into one of the bigger issues, why I was such a big Ted Cruz supporter for the long time. It's religious liberty. I feel that religious liberty is being threatened by the state in this country. And I know where Gary stands on that, but there are a lot of people who want to know, Alex, where do you stand on religious liberty?
Now, religious liberty, to me, religious liberty just falls under like everything else. It's individual liberty. Your liberty to practice religion is part of your individual liberty. And this is where I did actually have an issue with a lot of the religious liberty laws, like the one in Indiana, not because it gave people the right to discriminate.
Oh, yeah. Those laws sucked. They did not do what they actually said they were going to do.
Yeah. But I mean, my particular issue was it shouldn't be like the ability to act on your conscience shouldn't be a privilege you have because you're religious, but it should be a privilege you have. Not a privilege. It should be a right you have as an individual to make choices about your individual property. So basically that I do your ability to act on your conscience is a part of your individual liberty. It's something you should do as an individual. Even someone without a spirituality should be able to act on their conscience. It shouldn't be based on – it's just based on the fact that you're an individual and you're alive, period.
Yeah, and you see, you just gave a very classic libertarian answer. I don't know why it's so hard for so many other people just to say it like that. I think if more people did, we'd have a lot more open communication of, you know, some on the religious right.
Some, yeah, and I mean, yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And that's part of another reason why I wanted to do this race, because of messaging. I do feel a lot of times that not only the messaging as far as building that broad coalition is there, but also getting people who are not libertarians to libertarianism. We focus so much on sometimes demonizing government, and government causes this, government causes that. And while all that is true, and I agree with all of that, a lot of times people aren't voting. They're voting for self-interest. They're voting for what's in it for them. And you have to be able to articulate empowerment. So, for example, if we're making the argument that we want to get government out of the way because it's holding you back from the what's possible for you to do, we need to enlighten people far as what is possible. So if people don't believe that if they were free, that they could do amazing things, then they're not going to necessarily be behind the message that government should be moved out of the way. So we need to convince people of the power of themselves as an individual and really get them excited about being free and what's possible if they're free, what's possible if private investment and capital move to where it was naturally see where it was it would naturally go, and the possibilities. Once you see the possibility, then, of course, you want government moved out of the way. But a lot of times we just focus on that second part without making sure people understand that first part, once seeing what's possible.
Alex, we're going to start wrapping things up. But I recently had another guest I was recording with, and I asked her the same question. This is Rebecca Bidlack. She's running for Congress out in Florida. And I asked her, do you feel optimistic about the future? In your case, I'm going to put a little bit of a different twist on it. Is this the libertarian moment or is it not?
I think it's been the libertarian moment. I mean, the thing, it depends how you measure success. Are people in general thinking more libertarianism? Is libertarianism often more times being brought up in conversation? For sure. I would say libertarianism is showing up in popular culture and in the conversation more than I've ever noticed it before. And even if not necessarily everyone is perfectly libertarian down the line, I would say people are more libertarian on more issues than ever before, and I think everything's moving in the right direction, especially since when you have people growing up now, they're seeing the benefits of innovations like Uber and Airbnb. It's hard not to be a libertarian and see the power of investment in technology. So even when you meet a lot of progressives, they may speak a good game, but at the end of the day, in their hearts, they do appreciate those technologies and whatnot, and they do probably have a lot more liberty in their heart. I'm more thinking of this as a generational thing. People who are growing up with all this innovation, the internet and whatnot, this essentially because the internet is basically one big libertarian microcosm, that the next generation gives me a lot of hope, a lot of optimism that this next generation is the libertarian moment, not just this year, not just the last few years, although all of this has been very positive, but going forward for what that next step is. So, yes.
Awesome. I thought at one point you were going to pull Marco Rubio and say, this is the American century.
This is the libertarian century.
I love that. You should hashtag that now, libertarian century.
I should.
let's do that together. I'll start tweeting out and you start tweeting out and we'll just make this the libertarian century.
We'll do it. Let's do it.
Alex, if people want to get in contact with you, check out your website, your Facebook, all that stuff, how can they follow you?
Got it. Basically, you can find a lot of things just by Googling me. I definitely recommend Googling me. It's fun. But basically,
it sounds so dirty when you say it that way.
It's very good. It's very good. But basically, go to alexmerced.com. At alexmerced.com, you can find out about all my projects. I have a libertarian news site that I run, libertarianwingmedia.com. So any of you guys who've been looking for a site to write for and would like to contribute, it's basically an open door policy. It's a website for libertarians who want to just, you know, if they want to contribute many articles, one article, but the idea is to create just sort of one new site where libertarians can contribute freely, libertarianwingmedia.com. I have a lot of other projects. We created a libertarian social network at libertariansocial.com. I've made a website where we list to try to feed the libertarian economy by telling people about libertarian businesses and libertarian media, so that way they can go out and purchase things from other libertarians to feed the libertarian economy. That's libertarianbuyer.com. I also started the LP Outreach Caucus. This is that's lpoutreachcaucus.com, which is the goal is going to be created to organize around trying to message to not traditionally libertarian communities and try to build up the libertarians in places and within communities that it's not that we have a lot of room to grow. So that's where you can reach out. And again, that's alexmerced.com.
Oh, and there's one more important thing you wanted to kind of let people know about before we wrapped things up.
Yeah, this is more on a somber note, because basically the last couple months we've had some big hits to Liberty, and I wanted to make sure that everyone keeps these people in their thoughts. First off was Mark Feldman, which was a huge loss for the Liberty movement. I mean, especially after he made such a huge impact this year as part of the presidential nomination purpose. So I still have my picture with Feldman as my Facebook avatar. Basically a couple days ago, Nathan LeBron, a fairly popular libertarian figure here in New York, passed away from cancer. Sad. I don't think I ever got to cross paths with Nathan. I think we were both at the convention at the same time, so very sad, but a huge loss here in New York. And then on top of that, Andrew Martin, who I do know personally and have known since I ran for public advocate in 2013, he's only 21 years old, had a brain aneurysm. And this kid's...
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, so I've heard the prognosis is not very good. So please, everyone who's listening to this, keep him in your prayers. This kid is brilliant. I mean, I've never met anyone who was so dedicated, so excited about liberty. Always had a huge pleasure talking to him. And he started his company with some other libertarians by the name of Blockchain Technologies, programmer. Just basically the future of what young libertarians can do. And it's incredibly, incredibly heartbreaking to hear about his situation, especially at such a young age. So I just wanted to make sure that people are aware that there's these great libertarians who have passed away, who are in the midst of medical tragedy, and these are people who we should applaud their efforts and make sure that, you know, we appreciate all the things they've done for the cause.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, Alex, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure getting to talk to you, Sharon. Best of luck in your race.
Got it. Thank you very much. And for everyone out there, make sure to check out the campaign website over there at alexmercedforny.com, where you can find campaign t-shirts and campaign platforms. So that way you can ask me, want to know what I think on every issue.
Bam. There you go. Anyway, folks, you know, listening to Alex, I hope you understand two things. One, the biggest thing he brought up, we have to be optimistic. We joked about saying this is the libertarian century, but maybe throughout all this negativity and dark paths we have to look at, maybe the biggest way to light brush fires of freedom in people's minds, I know that sounds cliche, but maybe the best thing to do that is to evaluate your life. Consider a way that maybe you could contribute. We have people who are no longer with us, people that are currently clinging on to life. Keep them in your prayers, because we definitely need more people like them. But also, whether or not you're religious or not, for me, what I'll be doing tonight is I'll be praying. I'll be praying for a better tomorrow. I'll be praying for all of us to just tap our greatest potential that we can. And I'll be praying that we can not only preserve liberty, but spread it throughout our lives in any way, shape, or form we can. As always, find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, blah, blah, blah. Or you could just check out rwmartinez.liberty.me, click the podcast tab, and you'll see all our platforms, because frankly, I'm starting to forget all of them. Anyway, as always, screw the FCC. Good night, America.
Stay connected to Liberty's Rabble Rouser on Facebook and Twitter to stay up to date with the latest episodes, blogs, and other available content. What are you waiting for?